Ma nin en quantova, ansi tinta levarda oiolosseo, vefania mariat elentari ortane, ar ilie tier undolave lumbule, ar sinda noriello caita mornie, i fal malinna imbemet arhisie, un tupa calacirio miri oiale. Si vanua na, romello vanua, valle mar. Na marie, nai hiro valie valle ma, nai elie hirova, na marie.
Ah, like gold fall the leaves in the wind. Long years numberless as the wings of trees. The long years have passed like swift draughts of the sweet mead in lofty halls beyond the west, beneath the blue vaults of Varda, wherein the stars tremble in the song of her voice, holy and queenly. Who now shall refill the cup for me? For now the kindler, Varda, the queen of the stars, from Mount Everwhite has uplifted her hands like clouds, and all paths are drowned deep in shadow. And out of a grey country darkness lies on the foaming waves between us, and mist covers the jewels of Karakiria forever. Now lost, lost to those from the east is Valimar. Farewell, maybe thou shalt find Valimar. Maybe even thou shalt find it. Farewell. Varda is the name of that lady whom the elves in these lands of exile name Elbereth. Suddenly the river swept round a bend, and the banks rose upon either side, and the light of Lorien was hidden. To that fair land Frodo never came again. The travellers now turned their faces to the journey. The sun was before them, and their eyes were dazzled, for all were filled with tears. Gimli wept openly.
"I have looked to the last upon that which was fairest," he said to Legolas, his companion. "Henceforward I will call nothing fair unless it be her gift."
He put his hand to his breast.
"Tell me, Legolas, why did I come on this quest? Little did I know where the chief peril lay. Truly Elrond spoke, saying that we could not foresee what we might meet upon our road. Torment in the dark was the danger that I feared, and it did not hold me back. But I would not have come had I known the danger of light and joy. Now I have taken my worst wound in this parting, even if I were to go this night straight to the Dark Lord. Alas for Gimli, son of Gloin."
"Nay," said Legolas, "alas for us all, and for all that walk the world in these after days, for such is the way of it, to find and lose, as it seems to those whose boat is on the running stream. But I count you blessed, Gimli, son of Gloin, for your loss you suffer of your own free will, and you might have chosen otherwise. But you have not forsaken your companions, and the least reward that you shall have is that the memory of Lothlorien shall remain ever clear and unstained in your heart, and shall neither fade nor grow stale."
"Maybe," said Gimli, "and I thank you for your words. True words, doubtless, yet all such comfort is cold. Memory is not what the heart desires. That is only a mirror, be it clear as Heledzaram, or so says the heart of Gimli the dwarf. Elves may see things otherwise. Indeed, I have heard that for them memory is more like to the waking world than to a dream. Not so for dwarves. But let us talk no more of it. Look to the boat. She is too low in the water with all this baggage, and the great river is swift. I do not wish to drown my grief in cold water."
He took up a paddle and steered towards the western bank, following Aragorn's boat ahead, which had already moved out of the middle stream. So the company went on their long way down the wide hurrying waters, borne ever southwards. Bare woods stalked along either bank, and they could not see any glimpse of the lands behind, The breeze died away, and the river flowed without a sound. No voice of bird broke the silence. The sun grew misty as the day grew old, until it gleamed in a pale sky like a high white pearl. Then it faded into the west, and dusk came early, followed by a grey and starless night. Far into the dark, quiet hours they floated on, guiding their boats under the overhanging shadows of the western woods. Great trees passed by like ghosts, thrusting their twisted, thirsty roots through the mist down into the water. It was dreary and cold. Frodo sat and listened to the faint lap and gurgle of the river, fretting among the tree roots and driftwood near the shore, until his head nodded and he fell into an uneasy sleep. Chapter 9. The Great River. Frodo was roused by Sam. He found that he was lying, well wrapped, under tall grey-skinned trees in a quiet corner of the woodlands on the west bank of the great river, Anduin. He had slept the night away, and the grey of morning was dim among the bare branches. Gimli was busy with a small fire near at hand. They started again before the day was broad. Not that most of the company were eager to hurry southwards. They were content that the decision, which they must make at latest when they came to Rauros and the Tindrock Isle, still lay some days ahead, and they let the river bear them on at its own pace, having no desire to hasten towards the perils that lay beyond, whichever course they took in the end. Aragorn let them drift with the stream as they wished, husbanding their strength against weariness to come. But he insisted that at the least they should start early each day and journey on far into the evening, for he felt in his heart that time was pressing, and he feared that the Dark Lord had not been idle while they lingered in Lorien. Nonetheless, they saw no sign of an enemy that day, nor the next. The dull grey hours passed without event. As the third day of their voyage wore on, the lands changed slowly. The trees thinned and then failed altogether. On the eastern bank to their left, they saw long, formless slopes stretching up and away towards the sky. Brown and withered they looked, as if fire had passed over them, leaving no living blade of green. An unfriendly waste without even a broken tree or a bold stone to relieve the emptiness. They had come to the brown lands that lay, vast and desolate, between southern Mirkwood and the hills of the Emyn Muil. What pestilence or war or evil deed of the enemy had so blasted all that region, even Aragorn could not tell. Upon the west to their right the land was treeless also, but it was flat, and in many places green with wide plains of grass. On this side of the river they passed forests of great reeds, so tall that they shut out all view to the west, as the little boats went rustling by along their fluttering borders. Their dark, withered plumes bent and tossed in the light, cold airs, hissing softly and sadly. Here and there through openings, Frodo could catch sudden glimpses of rolling meads, and far beyond them hills in the sunset, and away on the edge of sight a dark line, where marched the southernmost ranks of the misty mountains. There was no sign of living, moving things, save birds. Of these there were many, small fowl, whistling and piping in the reeds, but they were seldom seen. Once or twice the travellers heard the rush and whine of swan wings, and looking up they saw a great phalanx streaming along the sky.
"Swans," said Sam, "and mighty big ones too."
"Yes," said Aragorn, "and they are black swans." "How wide and empty and mournful all this country looks," said Frodo. "I always imagined that as one journeyed south it got warmer and merrier until winter was left behind forever."
"But we have not journeyed far south yet," answered Aragorn. "It is still winter, and we are far from the sea. Here the world is cold until the sudden spring, and we may yet have snow again. Far away down in the Bay of Belfalas, to which Anduin runs, it is warm and merry, maybe, or would be but for the enemy.
But here we are not above 60 leagues, I guess, south of the South Farthing away in Yorkshire, hundreds of long miles yonder. You are looking now southwest across the north plains of the Riddermark, Rohan, the land of the horse lords. Ere long we shall come to the mouth of the Limelight that runs down from Fungorn to join the great river. That is the north boundary of Rohan. And of old, all that lay between Limelight and the White Mountains belonged to the Rohirrim. It is a rich and pleasant land, and its grass has no rival. But in these evil days, folk do not dwell by the river or ride often to its shores. Andwin is wide, yet the orcs can shoot their arrows far across the stream, and of late, it is said, they have dared to cross the water and raid the herds and studs of Rohan. Sam looked from bank to bank uneasily. The trees had seemed hostile before, as if they harbored secret eyes and lurking dangers. Now he wished that the trees were still there. He felt that the company was too naked, afloat in little open boats in the midst of shelterless lands, and on a river that was the frontier of war. In the next day or two, as they went on, borne steadily southwards, this feeling of insecurity grew on all the company. For a whole day they took to their paddles and hastened forward. The bank slid by. Soon the river broadened and grew more shallow. Long stony beaches lay upon the east, and there were gravel shoals in the water, so that careful steering was needed. The brown lands rose into bleak wolds, over which flowed a chill air from the east. On the other side, the meads had become rolling downs of withered grass amidst the land of fen and tussock. Frodo shivered, thinking of the lawns and fountains, the clear sun and the gentle rains of Lothlorien. There was little speech and no laughter in any of the boats. Each member of the company was busy with his own thoughts. The heart of Legolas was running under the stars of a summer night in some northern glade amid the beech woods. Gimli was fingering gold in his mind, and wondering if it were fit to be wrought into the housing of the lady's gift. Merry and Pippin in the middle boat were ill at ease, for Boromir sat muttering to himself, sometimes biting his nails, as if some restlessness or doubt consumed him, sometimes seizing a paddle and driving the boat close behind Aragorn's. Then Pippin, who sat in the bow, looked back, caught a queer gleam in his eye as he peered forward, gazing at Frodo. Sam had long ago made up his mind that, though boats were maybe not as dangerous as he had been brought up to believe, they were far more uncomfortable than even he had imagined. He was cramped and miserable, having nothing to do but stare at the winterlands crawling by and the grey water on either side of him. Even when the paddles were in use, they did not trust Sam with them. As dusk drew on the fourth day, he was looking back over the bowed heads of Frodo and Aragorn and the following boats. He was drowsy and longed for camp and the feel of earth under his toes. Suddenly something caught his sight. At first he stared at it listlessly, then he sat up and rubbed his eyes, but when he looked again he could not see it any more. That night they camped on a small eyot close to the western bank. Sam lay rolled in blankets beside Frodo. "I had a funny dream an hour or two before we stopped, Mr. Frodo," he said. "Or maybe it wasn't a dream. Funny it was, anyway." "Well, what was it?" said Frodo, knowing that Sam would not settle down until he had told his tale, whatever it was. "I haven't seen or thought of anything to make me smile since we left Lothlorien." "It wasn't funny that way, Mr. Frodo. It was queer. All wrong if it wasn't a dream. And you had best hear it. It was like this. I saw a log with eyes." "The log's all right," said Frodo. "There are many in the river, but leave out the eyes." "That I won't," said Sam. "'Twas the eyes as made me sit up, so to speak. I saw what I took to be a log floating along in the half-light behind Gimli's boat, but I didn't give much heed to it. Then it seemed as if the log was slowly catching us up, and that was peculiar, as you might say, seeing as we were all floating on the stream together. Just then I saw the eyes, two pale sort of points, shiny-like, on a hump at the near end of the log. What's more, it wasn't a log, for it had paddle feet, like a swan's almost, only they seemed bigger and kept dipping in and out of the water. That's when I sat right up and rubbed my eyes, meaning to give a shout, if it was still there when I had rubbed the drowse out of my head. For the whatever it was coming along fast now and getting close behind Gimli. But whether those two lamps spotted me moving and stared, or whether I came to my senses, I don't know. When I looked again, it wasn't there. Yet I think I caught a glimpse, with the tail of my eye, as the saying is, of something dark shooting under the shadow of the bank. I couldn't see no more eyes, though. I said to myself, "Dreaming again, Sam Gamgee?" I said, and I said no more just then. But I've been thinking since, and now I'm not so sure. What do you make of it, Mr. Frodo?
I should make nothing of it but a log and the dusk and sleep in your eyes, Sam, said Frodo, if this was the first time that those eyes had been seen. But it isn't. I saw them away back north before we reached Lorien, and I saw a strange creature with eyes climbing to the flat that night. Haldir saw it too. And do you remember the report of the elves that went after the Orc band?
Ah, said Sam, I do, and I remember more too. I don't like my thoughts, but thinking of one thing and another, and Mr. Bilbo's stories and all, I fancy I could put a name on the creature at a guess. A nasty name. Gollum, maybe?
Yes. That's what I've feared for some time, said Frodo, ever since the night on the flat. I suppose he was lurking in Moria and picked up our trail then, but I hope that our stay in Lorien would throw him off the scent again. The miserable creature must have been hiding in the woods by the Silverload, watching us start off.
That's about it, said Sam, and we'd better be a bit more watchful ourselves, or we'll feel some nasty fingers round our necks one of these nights, if we ever wake up to feel anything. And that's what I was leading up to. No need to trouble Strider or the others tonight. I'll keep watch. I can sleep tomorrow, being no more than luggage in a boat, as you might say.
I might, said Frodo, and I might say luggage with eyes. You shall watch, but only if you promise to wake me halfway towards morning, if nothing happens before then.
In the dead hours, Frodo came out of a deep, dark sleep to find Sam shaking him.
"It's a shame to wake you," whispered Sam, "but that's what you said. There's nothing to tell, or not much. I thought I heard some soft plashing and a sniffing noise a while back, but do you hear a lot of such queer sounds by a river at night?" He lay down, and Frodo sat up, huddled in his blankets, and fought off his sleep. Minutes or hours passed slowly, and nothing happened. Frodo was just yielding to the temptation to lie down again when a dark shape, hardly visible, floated close to one of the moored boats. A long, whitish hand could be dimly seen as it shot out and grabbed the gunwale. Two pale, lamp-like eyes shone coldly as they peered inside, and then they lifted and gazed up at Frodo on the Eyot. They were not more than a yard or two away, and Frodo heard the soft hiss of intaken breath. He stood up, drawing Sting from its sheath, and faced the eyes. Immediately their light was shut off. There was another hiss and a splash, and the dark log shape shot away downstream into the night. Aragorn stirred in his sleep, turned over, and sat up.
"What is it?" he whispered, springing up and coming to Frodo. "I felt something in my sleep. Why have you drawn your sword?"
"Gollum," answered Frodo, "or at least so I guess."
"Ah," said Aragorn. "So you know about our little footpad, do you? He padded after us all through Moria and right down to Nimrodel. Since we took to boats, he's been lying on a log and paddling with hands and feet. I've tried to catch him once or twice at night, but he is slyer than a fox and as slippery as a fish. I hoped the river voyage would beat him, but he's too clever a waterman. We shall have to try going faster tomorrow. You lie down now, and I'll keep watch for what is left of the night. I wish I could lay my hands on the wretch. We might make him useful, but if I can't,
We shall have to try and lose him. He's very dangerous, quite apart from murder by night on his own.